College basketball fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. And we're going to talk some college hoops. What else are we going to do? It's called the College Ball Show, obviously. Now, we do have our Final Four set. It's all ready to go. Kicks off, obviously, this Saturday. And then it comes to a crescendo Monday night. Baylor, number one seed, one of them. Not the overall number one seed like Gonzaga, but Baylor versus Houston is the first game, 4:14 on the dot central time tip. Baylor is a 5-point favorite at the time. And then number one overall, Gonzaga against UCLA. That's right, UCLA, 14-point favorite there, but we got to give a lot of credit, not just to the Pac-12, that was last week. Oregon State pulled off an upset too. We got to get USC, made it all the way down to the wire there. So I suppose something was going to be Pac-12 there, right, because of Oregon. But it's funny about UCLA, UCLA, right? I mean, we didn't think they were going to get there last week. We'll just straight up say that. But, you know, in the first month of the show in January, when we talk Pac-12, that's kind of who we talk about. Then they kind of stuttered. I think they lost, four in a row down the stretch. And USC looked better. Oregon looked better. And then the Pac-12 just exploded in general. So I got to say, I did not see, an 11th seed make it to the Final Four this year. But UCLA made it to the Final Four, man. So we are going to preview and predict all that good stuff, no doubt about it. We are going to talk about what happened last night. Gonzaga moving on, Michigan in a tight, tight game that was so winnable for him. But UCLA stood pat and, you know, hit the shots when they needed to and defended very well. Baylor and Arkansas, it's 81-72. That was a close game, a lot of that game, Houston, Oregon State as well. We're going to talk it all up in just a second. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You know, you don't have to go to blogtalk and ropeadope and download the show there like some folks do or listen to the browser there. You can find this show under that platform, ropeadope radio podcast, at Apple Podcast, our iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really any, almost everywhere. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found damn near anywhere while you're at it. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? It's basketball, football, baseball, basketball, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. It's simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract to force. You can stream it anywhere on any device. They do have a cloud DVR available. And right now, if you sign up for the Choice Package, which is an upgrade, you get a free year of HBO Max. And for a limited time, and I quote myself here, limited time, I want to stress that, you get the NBA League Pass Premium for the rest of the season. And obviously, it goes, you know, well into May this year. So that's AT&T TV. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall. You know, last week, I was kind of talking about, wouldn't that be something if after all that crazy shit that happened in the rounds of 64 and 32, wouldn't it be kind of funny if 3-1 seeds got there and then, you know, we were all kind of thinking Loyola, right? Whatever. And it really felt like that was going to happen in that Michigan-UCLA game, all 3-1 seeds, but that's not the case. We got a lot to talk about from these last couple of nights. What's going on, Marshall? I'm going to go ahead and bring you in and see how you're doing over or down there in Texas.
Life is not too bad, my friend. Life is not too bad. I'm just watching some basketball. I see opening day is tomorrow too. So the sports world never seems to stop. With COVID, the one thing we've had is literally a calendar of where sports are even more prevalent than normal. So we're get to enjoy a Final Four soon, opening day baseball, NBA is good, hockey's good. It's a very good time of the year. But for college basketball, I guess my opening show little rant or topic will just be on the coaching I've witnessed. And I got to give that Mick Cronin credit for UCLA, and along with Mark Few from Gonzaga, because you can tell from watching their offenses, Chris, that both those teams are very well coached. Now, do they have good players? Yes, because, I mean, hell, I could drop a great X's and O's offense, beneath the Jimmys and the Joes. Okay, so it goes back and forth. But what was really prevalent to me, and what it was the first opening weekend, the second opening weekend, was there was a couple of teams who have very talented players, but coaches that they get some hype, but they're not that great of offensive coaches. Arkansas, they're the number one to me, because I watched all of their games and they had a nice run. And that was with really not a fluent offense at all. I mean, that offense was just bad, but they made it to the Elite Eight. So clearly they have the talented players, but just when you watch the first half of their games, Chris, if you watched it, you just kind of had a feeling in your head of, well, who's going to shoot or what's the plan here, guys? And you made a deep run. And the other coach who, in my opinion, let his team down or is not that good of an X's and O's coach yet is the Bama coach, who, again, team made a far run. A hell of a good run. But if you watch Bama, UCLA down the stretch, they were jacking up big, like Curry range threes, or Bama's point guard would try to dribble in UCLA's center and got his layup swatted four times at the rim. And then in overtime, what was a marvelous game, Bama's shot selection was complete garbage.
There was no overtime. Only one team showed up for overtime.
Well, and again, that Cote, I mean, the cold-blooded dude with the long hair and the stash on UCLA was hitting some Curry type shots. That dude said, "Screw this game, I'm winning it for us." But my biggest take from the last 4 days of basketball, or the second weekend, was the amount of lack of offensive fluidity some teams have compared to teams that do. If you watch UCLA play, it is a simple, they get set, there's a lot of dribble, drive, penetration, and kick, and they normally put up a pretty good quality shot compared to, and again, these are the ones that stood out, in Alabama or Arkansas, Chris, who have incredibly talented players, but let's just jack up a three, or let's let our point guard get swatted at the rim over and over again. And it was the difference of why the teams I've mentioned, Gonzaga and UCLA, are still around, and teams who have probably players who are relatively the same skill level or very close are out due to just offensive possessions, where as a fan, or if you bet the game, or if you love the team or just enjoying the game, you're like, what the hell is your plan? And it amazes me that those teams made it that far. So again, if you're a fan of those teams, like, your future's bright, but God, if you could run an offense, you could maybe still be around for this upcoming weekend.
Well, and as far as UCLA though, like, I remember, you know, if we're being honest though, remember last week, and you said, what are we still talking about UCLA for? So, you know, I mean, neither of us thought they'd get that far.
No, I'm just saying, when you watch,
and if you want to go Gonzaga,
offense to it.
Yeah, the offense is there. Some of it's coaching, some of it's the players, like you said, jacking shots and doing stuff that keeps happening. Like, I thought you mentioned it really well with going to the rack. When it's like, dude, you can stop going to the rack with that dude. He's gonna block you. Some of it is though what we see. We can talk about talent, right? There's a lot of talent teams out even before this weekend. But veteran leadership plays into this as well.
Oh,
that,
true.
That plays into it a whole lot. And Gonzaga has a whole lot of that. And by the way, Gonzaga's a hell of a team. They should win it this year if they're ever going to win it. They have a veteran team. And they did get a nice little – I mean, USC's a good club and all. They made a nice run. But that's a pretty good opponent for the Elite Eight. And then Creighton, did you really think that Creighton would beat Gonzaga? So it's not like they just look so awesome. Some of that had to do with their path to it too. But they have a veteran leadership type thing, and I think that plays into it as well. That overtime, though, like you said, I mean, Alabama had a couple times against UCLA where it's like, all right, dude, go stretch into a six-point game now. You need a bucket. Go get it. Nope, didn't get a bucket. And it just kept happening. Like I said, only one team really showed up. It was the UCLA just, you know, done. They just handled them in overtime. That game was done. I think it was a 6 or 7 point game like that. Michigan handled Florida State. It took them a little while to get going, but they handled them. That Baylor-Arkansas game, I thought Arkansas, though, I got to push back a little bit on the Arkansas-Baylor game. I thought they played pretty damn good, and they kept making these little runs back to be like, oh, Baylor was about to pull away. Nope, they're into that game. So I thought they played all right there, all things considered, especially down the stretch. Baylor just was better than them, but they shot the ball well overall. They shot 48%. They don't jack a lot of threes, though, because – the thing is, they were 3 of 11, though. That was the problem. And too many turnovers, too many dumb falls, too. But, yeah, I mean, the thing is, we do see this a lot from talented teams when it comes to March Madness. We see it every year almost, not to this extent in the first round, or the first two rounds, of course. But, you know, that Houston-Oregon State game, for a second there, I thought Oregon State was going to be able to do it. Gonzaga looked great in both games, no doubt about it. But really, last night, that Michigan-UCLA game, once again, Michigan had a chance. Like, UCLA started out really well, and I think it was 27-23 at the half. And Michigan and UCLA, though, I thought started really, really well. And down the stretch of that game, so many times – I mean, obviously, without Levers – they win that, or with them, they probably win that game. I think when you lose that tight of a game, and that's the difference. A big shout out to UCLA, by the way. First Elite Eight appearance since 2008. First Final Four since 2008. And another thing is, when they beat Bama, UCLA beat Bama, this is from ESPN Stats and Info, as a 7-point underdog. The Bruins are the 9th 7-point underdog to win in this NCAA tournament, the most in a single tournament since the field expanded since 1985. And just even in the last tournament, right, 2019, 7-point underdogs were 0 of 24, which is a freaking crazy-ass stat. But I think it was 7 or 8 straight misses, 3:38 to play, 8 straight misses against UCLA. So they hung in there and played defense. But to be honest with you, they could have had a 5-point game, and it probably shouldn't have came down to that, because the other team kept missing and missing it too. But that freaking air ball, Marshall, was wide open shot. What is it? Wagner? Is that guy's last name? Wide open shot.
Wagner, yeah.
Wagner. Wide open shot. He airballs it. But then the dude who got the pass, not the rebound, just had to do this. There's 8 seconds left. He catches it all one motion, 180, twist your body, one-handed, like Dr. J type. Like, what do you take a dribble, dude? Get a rebound. You still had a timeout. Those last 8 shots, most of them were pretty decent shots. And they just choked, too. I think part of it is that I'm not taking any way, credit away from UCLA. But if you look at it, about that 3:30 something, they kept missing too. It was stuck on that score for a while. So I think this had to do with Michigan missing shots too, because some of them were just wide open. It wasn't great defense.
Yeah, and you know, it does come down to having livers on the court. I will say that as I've seen a little more UCLA, of course, of late, the one advantage they do have, and obviously they got Gonzaga, which is going to be a beast. But the one thing I noticed, and I wish I noticed it sooner so I could have like bet them a little more coming into the tournament, just because I don't know, they've clearly reached their potential. But they're a team who has multiple guys that can score. Like from watching their last couple of games past weekend, they have like 3 to 4 guys that can get a bucket. And I know we're getting a little high here on the UCLA love, but just for the way they've been going, not many teams in the tournament have 3 to 4 guys you trust with the ball. Like that's just not true at all. For all the March Madness games we've watched, most teams in college have 2. And you're now starting to see why, when in potential, this UCLA team is at where they are. Because, again, you got 4 guys that can score, Chris. That's really a rarity. Obviously, Gonzaga does, too. Gonzaga's got probably 5 to 6. But for a regular team, so obviously the Pac-12, it's normally not on TV that much. It's on the Pac-12 network, which no one in America seems to have. But you can see why this team has potential to be where they are, just because there's multiple options. And one of the reasons why it is frustrating, as I've ranted all year about having these teams go through these 5-minute drops without scoring, is because most teams in college basketball, you have 2 options. And a defense knows that too. So if you're playing Team X, and Team X has a point guard and a shooting guard that can score, and one guy has an off night, and the other guy, you put your best defender on him, now this team literally has no third option. Well, shit, you ain't going to score then, or it's going to be ugly. Or maybe your option one gets in foul trouble. Well, damn, guys, now we have one option to score, and the rest of our team who's not going to get the most efficient buckets or maybe just score up rebounds. So the advantage they have shown as to why they are here is because they, again, multiple people can score. And that's, hell, even for Carolina, all the teams I love, I'll be honest. Like, even Creighton this year, Creighton had pretty much 2 talented guys. Mizzou had 2 reliable scorers. Carolina had a lot of bigs. They're a little bit of a different team. You know, you could almost go through the whole bracket. We won't do that. But most teams have had 2 scorers. They have kind of an asset, which makes, again, spreading the ball a lot easier. And it makes people playing defense on them hard. And in fairness to Michigan, as you said, Michigan played solid defense all year. That was kind of their calling card. They were in the toughest conference all year, Chris. They played defense hard all year, and they came within probably 6 inches to a foot, because that 3-pointer looked online. It was just a little bit short. But you almost never see. You almost never ever see a airballed shot with the game on the line unless it's blocked. But
yeah,
I that dude def god I can't that dude wanted that one back, because he actually got a good look too.
He did. So they got it, caught up, and he's like, shit, I'm just gonna shoot it. He was almost too flat-footed though. You see that? Like, he was in his stance, and it's, yeah, like, fuck it, I'm just gonna throw it up. But it was wide open. Here's the thing though, we're talking about their scoring, but to me, and I'm not saying you are correct, they're crafty dudes. They're just something about them, but they sure didn't do that much last night, though. They didn't get a point off the bench. 0 off the bench, which is crazy. They had 2 dudes that one of them's 11-19. The other was 5-for-10, but the other guy's 1-of-6, 2-of-10. They shot the ball under 40%. They were 3-of-13 from the 3. They got to the line only 6 times. I think, though, they forced more turnovers, 14. They got Dickinson in foul problems a little bit. He only played 20 minutes. You give another 5 to 7 minutes from him, that could be a difference. Although I'm not denying what you're saying, you are correct, but the defensive side, for me, stood out more last night to get that W. And just because, like I said, they were not choking, but they were fucking up on their offense too, because it was stuck on that score for so long. So although what you said is true, in that game it was the defense, and whatever we want to say about that air ball, I mean, that was fun. And that guard, man, he will get all up in you. They're just crafty. They're a little rough. They're kind of old school, but they have 3-point shooters. Yeah, they're fun to watch, no doubt about that. What else was I gonna say? I was just on something too. What the hell was that game? Oh, the Arkansas or dude, I thought that Oral Roberts guard.
Oh, he had
I
a look.
I thought that was going down for sure. I thought that was going down. That was in. That I still think that's in. Did that go in? Because I still think it did.
That dude, I mean, Oral Roberts, that was a basketball game from the moment that thing tipped off. It was, and again, I think Arkansas can work on their offense, but that was just a fun game. I don't think the lead was ever bigger than, I think the lead was maybe 6 or 7 points max either way the whole game. And that was just, Oral Roberts just kept jacking up threes and they kept making them. That was a super fun run to watch. They drew up a hell of a play, Chris. So in case you didn't watch, I believe Oral Roberts was down 2 with 3.8 seconds to go. They drew up a perfect play, and their guard pretty much got the ball near half court. He got 3 dribbles off, which is super hard because normally the basketball rule is you get a dribble per second. He got 3 quick dribbles off, was on like the arc of the 3-point line, and had no hand in his face at all. And when the ball left his hand, it looked good. It just happened to clip the front side of the rim. But, I mean, that thing was within a couple of rotations of drop. And even off the bounce looked like it could have possibly hopped in. That would have been really cool because that would have been the first ever 15 seed to make the Elite Eight. Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast, made the Sweet 16.
Right.
But no 15 seed has ever won the second weekend, and that was a game of inches away, and that was a super fun game to see by Max Amos. That was a fun one, Chris. That was just a very hell of a fun basketball game to enjoy. And now, speaking of, to kind of wrap up our takes, the Loyola Chicago game, and I know that, you know, it's both teams are dead. Them and Oregon State are both out. But the
about dead when it comes to this, okay? Think of that, the lady and stuff. Don't talk about
that. The way Loyola Chicago played against Illinois, it caught me by surprise. I mean, Loyola Chicago knocked out, in my opinion, the second hottest team coming to the tournament. And Illinois never even made a run. And you get those feelings as a basketball fan or watching the games where a team is wasting a chance to put their foot on their throat. And I know that this is a super early reference, but for the first 7 minutes of the game, Oregon State had 3 points and Loyola Chicago had 9. But every time they were trying to hit a wide open three, they couldn't do it. And eventually, Oregon State found their rhythm, started hitting shots, and Loyola Chicago ended up going super cold. And they, Oregon State finished the first half on an 11-0 run. So, and I heard this mindset, Chris, and I just find it fascinating just because of the run they had. But Loyola Chicago, somewhat, a reporter said that, well, they thought it was a weird mindset because for once this year, they were the top dog and not the underdog. And it was a different mindset. Screw that shit. You just beat Illinois. I'm not going to buy the fact that, hey, we beat a team, and now we're the favorite in Vegas, and now we're supposed to adjust differently. I just – and again, it was only one person saying, I'm not saying that's true. But if that was the mindset the players had, that's really stupid. Or B, we found out that Loyola Chicago, their guard play, I just thought was really bad the whole game. They couldn't get open buckets. They missed the shots they had. But don't tell me when you've been hyped up all year and you knock off a top seed, you're going to come to the game and just, well, guys, we're getting the love for once. We don't know what to do. No, y'all just played a shitty game and couldn't shoot for the hell of it. So credit to Oregon State, because that was a team who had not made the tournament in 30 years, had not won a tournament game, I think, in 50. So
1982.
I mean, I know they're out of it now, but you got to give credit to Cinderella's, because that was a team who no one thought they'd beat Oklahoma State. No one thought they'd beat Loyola Chicago. And they just had a hell of a fun run. And that Anderson on their team put together one of the better tournament appearances out of any guard in the country. That dude balled out for his team every game because there were some top-notch guys who didn't. So credit to them. Props to Oregon State. A sad way for Loyola Chicago to end their miracle season because I thought they could have won that game. But it's just a poor performance that caught me by surprise.
Yeah, and even Oregon State the next game, they were down 34-17 at half, and they went on 44-33 in the second half and, you know, made a good game out of it, no doubt about it. Why don't we save the closer game for next? You know, Gonzaga, you know, at the beginning of the year, we talked about, especially in this COVID year and just everything, it's like, hey, if to be honest with you, who they had beat in the non-conference. Generally speaking, Gonzaga has a solid to very good normally non-conference. And the Baylor game got, you know, postponed, or not postponed, but canceled. But other than that, I mean, I remember that one year they played like six Big 12 teams. They played a damn good non-conference schedule. Now their conference schedule sucked even more than it had in years past because they didn't have anybody in there that well. I mean, sure, a couple of them are okay, but, you know, they got some halftime scares. That's about it. But at the beginning of the year, just to go back to that thought, we thought, hey, if it's ever going to be a year that you make it, because they've only made, what, is there only their second Final Four with this program? Third Final Four? Something like that since, you know, 99 or whatever. We thought, hey, this is, if you don't do it this year, I don't know if you're ever going to do it. You got the depth, you got a stud young point guard, you got a mix of everything, and you just are glued in. You are just glued in. This is the year to do it. So even though we talked up Ukla and we kind of slapped them in the face last week, not trusting them or thinking that they'd be here, what chances do you – you know, this is a West Coast game. So maybe it's just that West Coast feel. You know what I mean? Let's just put it this way. Is Ukla going to be able to go under the spread? Maybe I should put it that way.
I think they will, just because Gonzaga's offense is incredible. Chris, do we truly know? Does Gonzaga have a great defense? I wouldn't say they do. And I think that we've seen UCLA have some guys that can shoot from three that are, like, legit. So I'm not saying that I think they're going to win, but I do think that, again, let me get my teams together. Okay, Gonzaga's defense was not great against Creighton. Creighton got shot for shot what they wanted against Gonzaga. They just didn't make as many as they needed to. Like, you know, Gonzaga is just a superior offense. So I do think that they cover the spread, because I think UCLA is going to get their shots and probably hit them. I just think Gonzaga is going to score more buckets overall. I would look at taking UCLA with the, I think it's between 14 to 15 in that area, 13 to 16, something in that zone. I would definitely think they cover, just because, again, Gonzaga's defense is not that good. If we remember in their last game of their conference tournament, Chris, against BYU,
yeah,
BYU hit like 11 threes in the first half. Now, is that a high number and absurd? Yes, but again, they did it. Creighton was going punch for punch with them for the first half, a lot of first half of that game. So again, and I'm not saying that Gonzaga is
offensive. We know the Minnesota kid can play defense, though. We do know that.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying that Gonzaga's defense is abysmal, but it is average.
Sure.
But what is highly above average is you have the best offense in the country. And
yeah,
you can have a Madden rating of a 78 defense when your offense is a 95. Like, that's the other part of it is, Chris, is the fact that their defense really hasn't been tested that much.
No,
like, part of it is like
they
have buckled down.
Much
now. Yeah. So I'm sure there's probably a little bit of a higher level of, and they did buckle down a little bit in that BYU game. Like, they were down 9. With like 8 minutes to go, and they stepped up a little bit, and BYU couldn't hit shit. Like, you know, but overall, we've probably not seen a Gonzaga guys buckle down. This possession truly matters. It's all going down here, defense. But yeah, I do think that UCLA keeps the score close enough. It will be really interesting to me. I'll say this, as to how the game is played. Because if, and I don't kind of talk about UCLA a lot, but we got to give you the best takes we can give you. If you watch UCLA play, they do not like to run. It is a get the ball past half court. Let's put our shooters in position. And they got the big and Lacy. And let's make some passes and dribble and kick out. Gonzaga wants to run the ball like a track meet because they got guys that can shoot and they love to run. So will UCLA slow Gonzaga down? You'd assume they're going to try. If you're Gonzaga, you obviously want to play the game. You want to, you're aiming for 80s to 90s. But if you're UCLA, you're aiming for probably low 50s and 60s. I will say the one thing that makes you maybe think about it from a betting perspective is Gonzaga scored 80 to 90 points almost every game. And when they played Virginia, who's definitely the top five, top 10 slowest teams in the nation, they dropped like 93 on Virginia.
They whooped their ass.
They did. They did. And, you know, I think the over-under for that game was like a buck 35 or a buck 40. And the final score was like 99 to 60. And I know that's one game a while ago back, but my point is teams that want to play at a slower pace versus Gonzaga try to, but when you're down or when Gonzaga controls the momentum, it forces you to force your hand. So will we have a game in the 60s? If we have a game in the 60s, UCLA has a possible chance, but you have to find a way to contain that team in the 60s, which no one's really done all year, Chris.
That's very true. And we know what happens when you got a Minnesota point guard. The last two Minnesota point guards that were studs, UConn and Duke. Two words I'm going to say, and you figure it out from there. 1999 UConn, by the way. Okay, anyway, and I got Gonzaga winning. I do think, actually, that Ukola, the Bruins, UCLA, they will. I think they can actually make it. They're just scrappy enough, versatile enough to get under that spread. So I'm there, but we're both on the same page. Now, the other side. Houston has won, I think it's 11 in a row. We know about their defense. It's their first Final Four since 84. Do the history on that 37 years ago. Their defense is pretty damn good. If you look at that Syracuse game, they had them shooting 28% from the field. It was the lowest point total. What was it, 46, the lowest one, fewest points in school history, previous low 51, 1992 against Princeton for Syracuse. They can defend their ass off, and they're hot, and I didn't know what to do with them heading into this. Now, with Baylor, it's their first Final Four since 1950. You go back to that, first Final Four, right? There was eight total teams in the tournament. It says, like, I think it's Central Community College. Community College. It says CCNY won it all. UCLA played in it, right? John Wooden was in his third year coaching. If they only knew what Ukola was going to do with Wooden. The entire tournament took 5 days, and then the next year they actually expanded. So Baylor hasn't been there in a while. I did like the last couple of games where they didn't rely on the three like they had sometimes. And even against Arkansas, they only took 15 threes, hit eight of them, shot well from the field. This is going to be a good-ass game. They both can defend. You'd have to give the defense to Houston somewhat. But that was the one thing about Baylor since that break that they had for COVID. Their defense wasn't as tight. They do seem like they've tightened some of that up. We know they can score. It's not like Houston can't score either. But you're going with a hot team. Like I said, 11 in a row. Now you can go back and look at exactly who those teams were. But still, what says you about this Baylor-Houston? And for the last last time this year. According to ESPN's Basketball Power Index, Baylor, slight favorite, 52.3 to 47.7. So that's what they call in the business a 50-50, sir.
Excuse me. I'm leaning with Baylor. I think if you look at the most difficult games that Houston had this year, it was against Memphis. And Memphis is a very defensive-based team with some good athletes. And Houston was able to beat Memphis by 1 and 2 points. And I say that because Baylor's kind of got an athletic team like Memphis. Houston's division was pretty shitty all year. Besides Memphis, I mean, SMU was their, like, kind of the next best team, like, and Wichita State. Like, Houston really didn't get tested much at all besides the Memphis games. And so when you see a team in Baylor who is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, now you're playing a team in Houston who they got their guy Grimes. Grimes is a stud. That dude's cold-blooded. That dude can shoot. But he's their one major go-to option offensively. So if he gets in foul trouble like he did in a game earlier in the tournament, or he has an off night, Chris, I just don't see how they keep up. You just have Baylor's a much better offense, and I just don't think that they can go punch for punch with it. I know their win-loss record's phenomenal, but if you were to look at, like, quadrant one wins or, like, legit wins, Houston's resume, despite the win-loss record, is not the equivalent to a Gonzaga or a Baylor. Sure. I just think there's too big of a difference. So I would definitely take them. I would take the -5 too. I just think Houston's offensive issues come to bite them. And if Baylor can shoot the three, Baylor hasn't shot the three that won the tournament yet. But I still think there's a chance that could occur. Like, they got to get clicking one of these times. Like, they kind of got hot.
Oh, they were almost 50%. They're over 50%. They were 8 of 15 in the last game.
Oh, so okay. So is that one
they
before
weren't again? Jacking them, but they were 3 of 17 the other game. But at least it's not 4 of 28, though, either. They're showing they can go to the rack.
True. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's just they've not been quite as consistent. But yeah, I will gladly take Baylor with the five. I just think that it's too much for Houston to get through. And yeah, like you said, Houston was up 17 at half against Oregon State. Oregon State tied the game up with 3 minutes to go. Like, you know,
it looked over. It looked over. All right. So here we are. The one for all the marbles. Gonzaga in Baylor. I'm not saying it's a pick'em game, but we'll see if Baylor gets there. If it does, if they do and they cover the spread, it probably won't be all that much. This is a good game. This is a great game. This would be a great game. Now, obviously, I'm not going to take away from Houston if they win. Hey, go for it, you know. Baylor did. They didn't get a chance. I'm kind of glad that game didn't happen now. One, it would skew my mind, you know, the Gonzaga-Baylor game in non-conference. And two, we would have already seen it a little bit. So maybe the matchup is weird, and all of a sudden we see it on the court. We're like, oh, shit, yeah, we know who's going to win. I mean, we're both going to pick a winner. But I'm kind of glad that it didn't happen for this case because we get to see the one. It's a one and done. And – you know, Gonzaga does seem like they have a lot of pieces, no doubt about it. I already mentioned the Minnesota point guard. I mean, real quick, like you talked about Madden Raiden. What do you think of that mustache that dude has? Where would you put that in a Madden Raiden with that freaking, you know, that stash that dude has? I mean, that's a nice stash, I got to say. I like that stash. Anyway, I have been on Baylor the whole year. I even played like a month ago. I played that damn Dickie V thing, just being a fanboy of it, I guess. So it's hard for me to bail out them now. You're right. They hadn't, besides the last game, they hadn't hit the threes. They still got, you know, five dudes that are, well, one of them's 39.6, but 40, 45, 42, 40. They still got shooters. You know, Vital is a good big. They have two bigs, and then that Mayer's kind of an in-between guy. Or no, what the hell's his name? That long-haired dude, white dude. He plays pretty damn good. He can hit a three, but he can get some rebounds as well. But what I've liked about him, Butler, Teague, Mitchell, these guys aren't just gonna shoot, and that's it. You know, they like I said, even that game, it was 3 of 17. It wasn't 5 of 27. I like how they said, no, we're going downhill. We'll pass out there and hit the threes, and they're usually timely. But I just think that they got the guards. They got enough bigs. I'm worried about foul problems, and they're not, you know, Vital, you can actually dump the ball to him, but he's not going to do a ton with it. But the combination, I think they got enough bigs to just get by. but I think that they got the better guard play overall, and that's saying something. So I'm going to go with the Baylor Bears to knock off number one overall Gonzaga, and just hit the timely threes when it's time to go to the rack. They got Butler, Teague, Mitchell. They're going to get the job done. And it would be a crazy story, considering when you think of it, like we kind of forget about it, but, you know, because of the Baylor football squad, right? We kind of forget about that. But remember what happened in the Baylor basketball squad a chunk of year, like several years ago. I mean, Google it if you forget. But it's pretty crazy scenario. There's a documentary about it as well. I think it was an HBO documentary. I can't remember. But anyway, long story short, I'm going with the club I've been riding this whole time, the Baylor Bears, in overtime, 131. No, just kidding. I'm going to say like 92 to 89 in overtime, the Bears.
I love that call, man. That's a gutsy call, because, well, you mentioned the stat about teams who are 7-point dogs or like 0-24 committing to this tournament. I would, if again my gut Vegas call.
Yeah, what do you think it's going to be set at?
And again, I'm not a gambling genius, but I would guess it's got to be probably anywhere from 7 to 8.5. I think that's going to be right around the number. So I think, you know, we talked about that number with UCLA and Arkansas or Bama. I would have to say it's going to be between 7 to 9. I don't think it can be any less. They were 13 against Creighton. They're 14 against UCLA. Obviously, Baylor's probably the second highest power rated team. Yeah, I would have to say 7 to 9. And I think that's for the reason that
I was thinking 5 to 7, 6 to 8 or something.
Yeah, I think that's too low, but I obviously will potentially
I'm
find
obviously
out.
Riding with them though, so I'm biased.
Sure. I just think Gonzaga's offense is too much. Again, I think they've been in kind of a cruise control all year. It does seem when they need buckets from Timmy inside, the mustache guy, he almost scores at will. He's one of the best bigs with post moves in the country. They obviously got Suggs. They got Kispert. I just think offensively, I just think they've been on a mission all year, and I think that mission continues. I think an upset would be cool. I mean, I have no financial ties or anything to the team, but I just think that Gonzaga has been the team all year. That's their focus all year. And I think they get the job done. I'm not sure if they would cover the 7-9. I think that Baylor is going to keep it close, but I will take Gonzaga to win. Let's go 92 to 87.
You just freaking Price is Right me, dude. That's messed up, dog. Why'd you Price is Right me, dude?
Actually, no. They're playing at that big ass. $1 Lucas Oil.
$1.
They're playing at the Lucas Oil. I'm gonna go lower. Because they say that the shooting lines there are awful.
Well, I like my overtime feel then.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Right.
That's a good call. That is a good call. That is different.
86-81 Gonzaga. Because yeah, they say that shooting line is tough to see. It's just not. It's a stadium not built for just good shooting views.
Now they're in the bubble. Are they able to shoot in that thing all week? Because that'd be cool.
You would assume teams get walk-around times. You'd figure.
Smart to let them go in there and shoot if they want the best product. They're bubbled up, so you know why not.
It's not like the guys are doing much anyways. They're still in hotels.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. Eating cold food. Huh. Interesting. All righty. Well, God, I had something else I was going to say, too, and I just... Oh, either way, this is... Whoever wins this... And watch, it's Houston and UCLA. But whoever wins this, it's a great thing. Because Baylor, it's been forever. And Gonzaga's been that program... You know, I mean, they haven't, you know, they've had this one coach for so long and even had success with the other coach, but right before it. And, you know, Gonzaga still needs to get over that hump. And so that would be a great story. They sometimes they go big time Europe players. They've done every kind of way, it seems like. They've gotten some young studs. They obviously have a freshman stud right now. So, you know, to be such a quality program for so long, but only this being their second Final Four in this run, it'd be nice to see them get over the hump, get there, and actually cut it down. And that would obviously be an undefeated team, too. So that would be great. And then, like I said, Baylor, if you look at where they've been as a basketball program, they haven't even been here since, you know, the 50s or 1950. I think it's just a win-win. And as far as style of play, sign me up. You know, maybe the backdrop and all that in the arena is going to mess them up. But sign me up for that style of play, too. You know what I mean? That's a fun game to watch. Any last words, sir?
No, I'm just looking forward because we got Final Four, Masters, baseball. This is one of the best times of the year. And I'm happy. I mean, obviously, besides VCU, Chris, we had about as good of a term as we can have. I think the players have obviously handled the COVID well, the NCAA. I mean, besides the men's and women's weight room stuff, whatever. I mean, hey, this has gone really smooth because I think a lot of people, when they made the brackets, were like, oh, shit, well, what if a team gets a COVID bug or what if the head coach gets out? We've only had one hiccup, which is awesome. I'm just happy that it's been a relatively regular tournament that we're getting used to. I will say, I'll ask you one question. We'll get out the door. Do you think they'll go back to the regular Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday scenario? Or do you think they're going to maybe try this Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday deal? My gut says they're going to go back to Thursday to Sunday TV. I don't know. Just and there's no right or wrong. We don't know the answers. But what's your gut say? Would you prefer the Thursday to Sunday games, or you kind of like the later in the weekend, weekday rollover?
That's a good question. Through the Sweet, you know, the Sweet 16 actually did really well. It did better than the 2019. The final's not going to do as good because the Blue Blood. The Final Four, I don't think, will do that good. You know, do good, but not comparatively, because who's the Blue Blood in there? Gonzaga? Well, they haven't won a national championship, you know, so.
Yeah, you're not going to draw play, that.
Yep. Yeah. But also, the reason why the Sweet 16 did so good is because people are watching this 11 seed. They're watching this 12 seed. They're like, holy shit, this is a tight game. And so, it you know, not having Duke, not having North Carolina deep, not having Kentucky, not having all these squads, it really helped that a lot. Either they were upsets or they were tight-ass games, even like we talk about Oral Roberts. You know, that had to have been a highly rated game because it's like, oh, 15's going to do this. And so I think that those two games, Saturday, Sunday, were Sweet 16, were better than 2019 because of that. I haven't checked Monday, Tuesday yet. And I think there's going to be a drop off. And clearly, I think from year to year, there's going to be a drop, or from 2019 and whatnot, I think there'll be a drop off in the Final Four. Gonzaga, UCLA, look at the point spread. People might, you know, the casual fans may not. But if it's a tight game, that's a different story. But, you know, traditional Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I would take that. But I wouldn't be kicking rocks if they changed it, you know, for Monday, Tuesday, because Monday and Tuesday is – Sunday, Monday, Tuesday are the best night TV for ratings because everyone's home and stuff. So I'm kind of a – you know, it took me a while just to get the Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, for those play-in stuff. So I kind of like the Thursday through Sunday myself.
Same here. All right, well, on that note – we will be summarizing and recapping a finals game. I know there's a couple handful of years ago where I called into the show depressed because Carolina lost on a buzzer beater. So there will be no depression. I mean, unless I win a fortune or lose a fortune, which I don't think I'm going to do. So we will have a recap of the Final Four. Again, this has been a very nicely ran tournament. I hope it finishes on that note. Until then, wear a mask, stay safe. We appreciate your support. The boys are out tonight. Peace.